You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Welcome in to the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Use code DNVR when you sign up for a new account to get amazing odds boosts every single day. Rudo, AJ, Jesse coming to you live on an off day for the Colorado Avalanche. We figured it would be a fun off day to take a look at the Colorado Avalanche, the modern version of them, play a certain style of hockey, right? And it would be interesting to see which Avs of the past might fit in well with that style. Now, of course, you can't just cheat and say, oh, Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg, because, of course, they would fit well on any team in history.
Yeah. Guess what? Style doesn't matter to Hall of Fame players like that.
So none of the all-time Avs are anything like that, but we're going to talk about a handful of ideas for Avs that we think might fit well or might not fit so well.
Can I ask you guys a question before we get into this, since I wasn't on the post-game show last night?
Yeah, of course.
You may have answered this. Like, to me, it's an easy yes that Jared Bednar is the best coach in franchise history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I've just still seen some conversation out there. People – I saw this one that made me laugh. He was like, he needs to get to the Western Conference Final one more time. And then there was like one other criteria, like a couple more President's Trophies, and then
a couple more division titles.
Yeah, and I was sitting there.
Like, I also saw that crazy ass comment,
and I was just like, okay, but who are you comparing him to? Like,
yeah,
I have nothing wrong with you saying there's a criteria, but whose criteria is this that you're like looking for him to match or exceed? I think he's already the most decorated coach.
Yep.
In Avalanche history, but I just didn't know if there was for you guys anybody that came close. Like, to me, there's a knee jerk to say Bob Hartley, but I feel like that's partially just because like I was young and that was, you know, that was that like golden era team, but he got fired the year after they won the cup. So
I don't think it's close. The only argument you could make is like if you're giving Joe Quenneville credit for the stuff he did after he left Colorado,
right.
But in Colorado, it's not close. Jared Bednar is the best coach in the team's history.
Yeah, and like I guess a couple divisions, like he's only won two division titles, right? And this is his seventh year. Yeah, this is his seventh year.
Yeah.
So this is his seventh year. He's only won two division titles. With this year's obviously to be determined. But at the moment, feels like. Unlikely. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. But at the same time, he has obviously the bottomed out year, and then the next year's team just like really the next 2 years of teams were just okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like those were eighth seeds. They didn't win division titles. I think they would have won the division title the following year. I think because they were only 2 points back in St. Louis.
Full season.
Yeah. They had games in hand and they were playing great hockey. And then obviously they won the President's Trophy. Then they won last year's division title. And this year they're third. But yeah, like the COVID shortened year, like is where you're like, they might have gotten robbed of one there. But I think that would be the only thing that you could. Oh, the two out of 6 years he's won a division title.
Right.
Okay.
And to your point, it's actually kind of funny when it's like, well, if they win in that COVID year, you're literally talking about half of his time as the division champ.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, that comment in particular more of just kind of made me laugh. Because again, I didn't even necessarily have an issue with the criteria, but I was like,
yeah.
there's nobody that fits the criteria that you're saying is required to be considered the best coach in franchise history.
Maybe more accurate criteria for a Hall of Fame bid.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, well, okay, so if those things get accomplished, who does he pass?
Right. Who are those accomplishments unseating that currently kind of owns that title?
And again, why does he need those to pass them?
Right. And so I was just wondering if you guys had anybody that is like, yeah, you know, I think he's the best, but this, you know, this guy, whatever. To your point, Rudo, really the only one that I can think of is Joel Quenneville, if you give him credit for the 3 Stanley Cups that he won after he left Colorado and ignored the giant
black stain on his whole career.
Yeah, he's now on at least the first 2 of those.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that right now Jared Bednar has the 8th highest winning percentage ever in the postseason as a head coach?
Sick.
Really?
Yep.
It doesn't surprise me.
He is 0.03 of a point ahead of Scotty Bowman.
Really?
Scotty's a bum, confirmed.
Who won 9 Stanley Cups. So Jared Bednar, better than Scotty Bowman, confirmed.
You know what is funny about just kind of like that in general? This Avs team, like the years that they've lost in the postseason, obviously with the exception of the first year in Nashville, like they've had good playoff records in the years that they've been eliminated. Like they've won significantly more games than they lost. And I know that's kind of a dumb statement because, like, obviously, but like you get plenty of teams that go multiple rounds deep and end up like near 500.
Well, yeah, because if you win a 7-game series and then you lose in 5, you exit the postseason with a losing record.
Right. It's where if you sweep in the first round and then lose in 7, you have a very good winning record, even though you're out. And I feel like the Avs have had several of those where, like, they go through really good stretches and then they've lost in the second round and stuff like that. But that's not surprising that his record is.
Yeah. Well, and so for the record, he has the guys that are ahead of him. He has more games coached in the postseason at 63. He has 63 postseason games coached.
Crazy.
Okay.
Crazy.
Of the guys that are ahead of him in postseason win percentage, 6 of them have not even 30 games coached. The guy who's at the top has 2.
So that's cheating. They like don't even count.
Yeah. And like these are all time. Like the guy that's at the top is George O'Donohue, who is 2 games. He has 1 win and 1 tie from 1922 to 1923.
Playoff ties. Yeah, very, very normal.
I was going to say, how do you end up with 2 playoff games coached?
So, and then there's
a war.
Like we've got a 7-3, a 7-4, 18-9, 15-7. Like, okay. Of the guys that are ahead of him who actually have more games coached, Till Blake, who's like one of the all times, right? And Glenn Sather. You know,
those are the only 2 that are ahead of him that have more games coached.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's percentage points ahead of Scotty Bowman.
Isn't it funny how like this group, that 48 point year, like how it went from, these guys only played in a couple, you know, their core, they've only got a couple playoff games under their belts. You know, they don't really have the experience and blah, 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 to now suddenly like, their players and coaching staff are like among the NHL's like more veteran NHL or like playoff performers, participants.
Off the top of your head, my God, John Cooper, 139 games coached in the postseason. Jesus. He's the only other guy that's even close to this. Next is Pete DeBoer at 32.
There's a lot of sad playoff games coached by that guy.
A lot of regular season games that were pretty sad, too. coaches a boring style. That's kind of where we are, though.
Yeah. He's already put himself in that conversation.
And yet he's never won Coach of the Year.
Tough look.
Is John Cooper?
I think he won it once, right?
Yeah. Actually, no. I think
that's like the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Good coaches don't actually win that award.
The guys who coach the teams that are expected to be good every year don't ever win it because they're expected to be good every year.
It was the Calgary year when I thought Jared Bednar should have won Coach of the Year.
Sure.
It was the year after they surprised everyone by making it in on the last day.
Took it to Calgary in the first round that year.
That year that the team was much better than where they finished.
Didn't belong in that postseason and got very, very lucky that the West was terrible that year.
I mean, because a lot of help from teams too.
It was a 90-point team that made the eighth seed. Yeah. If you look at it, like,
see, but I always happened. felt like that was a better team than how they actually played in the regular season. And that was why I wasn't at all surprised when they smoked Calgary.
Their big problem that year is they couldn't win an overtime game.
Oh, was that the year?
Yep. Yeah. They had 14 overtime losses that year. 14
in overtime. Yeah. It was insane. Yeah.
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 Anyway, I think we've well established that as far as ex-Avs, there is no coach that could replace Jared Bednar. Yeah.
But the reason that we got talking about this, I mean, this ended up being a good place to start, is because last night we were talking about how the Avs play the game, and we were watching the intermission, and I turned to Rudo and I said, could you imagine if John Michael Lyles had gotten to play under Jared Bednar instead of Joe Sacco? Yeah.
Different worlds.
No like, about it. How much better would that guy have been? How much different do we think about his career if he plays the role that Sam Girard should be playing right now? And he's, you know, he's throwing up 50-point seasons.
Well, it's funny because, like, when Tyson Barrie started knocking down some of the JML records, and now obviously Cale Makar is blowing by all of them, it was funny because it was like a significant thing. And I think this is maybe kind of the point you're making, like, it kind of makes you appreciate John Michael Lyles a little bit more and how, like, really ahead of his time he was, that, like, he was this puck-moving, offensive-minded defenseman who had a decent NHL career, but, like, just that type of production, I feel like, wasn't, like, that was not as commonplace as it is now, relatively commonplace.
Certainly for someone undersized as well.
Like, forget even Jared Bednar, just John Michael Lyles playing in this era, I feel like would have been.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what spurred this discussion today was. Let's think about different Avs who from previous eras, because we're talking about John Michael Lyles. Well, what if Stanis Ozolinch played for this team? What if Stanis Ozolinch got to play for a team that was like, all right, you maniac, we're not asking you to do something that you're not going to want to do. Go attack like crazy all the time. And had the forwards with him, and not that he didn't play with pretty good forwards in his time in Colorado, but, I mean, my goodness, I feel like
set up so much for speed and going in that direction around a guy. Because that, like, Ozo doesn't have to change anything about his game to get Bednar's system, right? Like, that dude's like, oh, you want the defenseman to jump up every single opportunity? Awesome. I already do that.
Yeah, the Avs came very close to giving up a breakaway to Alex Ovechkin last night because Devon Taves jumped into the offensive zone, and Curtis McDermott was like, I don't know what to do now.
Bro, we were dying. So right before that, JJ, Jerez, and I pointed out, we were like, whoa. Devon Taves, Curtis McDermott pairing. Holy shit. Taves pinches. McDermott. We saw Ovechkin go, and you just saw McDermott look at him like, uh-oh. Sure enough, and had the puck just not gotten away from Ovi, that was a clean breakaway. Georgiev covers that puck, and I looked at JJ and went, that went about exactly as you expected it to. Like, almost Alex Ovechkin, the greatest goal scorer in the history of hockey, almost gets a breakaway 4 seconds after we noticed it was McDermott and Taves out there. And just mishandled the puck. Otherwise, that was going to be a disaster.
Yeah. That that shift made the post game piece because I was like, "Come on,
dude, we were dying laughing."
I am curious, and this is more about Bednar and the Avs specifically. How much impact, how much effect did Tyson Barry have on shaping this idea of the Avs defense? Because we saw over the years, not just Bednar, but coaches like Waugh had to learn, you kind of just got to let Tyson Barry go. You kind of just got to let him do his thing to get the most out of him.
Well, and you remember year one of Jared Bednar with Tyson Barry, it was a struggle.
Yeah, because Bednar was trying to rein him in.
Yeah, he was trying to get him to be a two-way guy. And he was trying to get him this and that. And I remember talking to Tyson that year, and there being a lot of conversations where he's like, look, they're talking to me about my D-zone play, and they're really trying to get me this and that. And then the next year, they came in with a different approach, and they just were like, Tyson, just be you. Just be you. And I've always wondered how much the experience with Bednar that he had with Zach Werenski coaching the Lake Erie Monsters to the Calder Cup played into that, where he was like, hey, I've got a really talented offensive guy here. Now, Werenski's a really different style of offensive defenseman than Tyson Barry. Tyson Barry likes to jump in and activate a lot more, and Werenski is a lot more of your classic, like, high IQ playmaker vision and, you know, operate from high in the zone and not be such a force in transition like Barry has been. So a little different styles, but I always wondered how much of an impact that development had, where he was just like, I tried to rein this guy in. It didn't work very well. I should just trust him to be him, like I did with Werenski, and just see how it goes. You saw it. You know, you saw the difference with Tyson Barry from the 48-point team to the next year, where Barry was very, very good over the rest of his Colorado tenure, in part because the Avs just were like, just be you. And when he left, you know, I think Chad has mentioned it, when he left.
Yeah, it was a disaster in Toronto.
You saw in Toronto, they tried to put the shackles on him. So, well,
it was funny because, like, even kind of going a step further in terms of, like, how did having Tyson Barry kind of shape the way the Avs play? I think the call out about having Zach Werenski at the American League level is huge. I never even really thought about that. But I think it was that first year after the 48-point season where Tyson Barry has a huge year and the Avs offense really – I feel like that was the first time you saw it kind of run through the defensemen like that, where they let Tyson Barry – be the driver on a lot of their offense. And again, like, it's hard to say exactly how much Jared Bednar said, that's what we want to do. Like, I remember growing up, AJ, I'm sure you remember this. Like, when you were little, all the best players in the league played defense because it was a way for coaches to get them more ice time. And you wanted your best player coming out, you know, of the zone late, being the one that was carrying the puck, controlling the zone, you know, when you were set up, kind of quarterbacking everything. And I really kind of feel like that first year after the 48-point year was kind of the first time that there was that, like, light bulb where it's like, oh, you mean if we have good enough players back there, we can do that at the NHL level too? Like, we can run some of our most dangerous offensive plays from the blue line. And that just has kind of now molded into, like, the identity of the Avs offense is low to high, and you run your offense through your defense. And it's about moving pucks up the ice quickly and being able to have defensemen who can transition up the ice, go from defense to offense. And I do think that Tyson Barry does have, like, a little bit more of, like, an underrated, like, almost kind of like lore in Avalanche, like, system history.
Yeah, well, and I think I think when you look at that year, that year that they made the postseason and lost to Nashville, you can see the makings of what they would want to become. Because you have Tyson Berry, you have Eric Johnson, who they still have. You have Mark Barberio, you have Sam Girard, you have Nikita Zadorov as your kind of like, he's a smoother skater than you would expect, given that he's there for size, physicality, all that, where, you know, ultimately, like, they would go and get Josh Manson, who would kind of slide into that archetype and produce at a better rate than you would have ever really expected, given that guy's history. And the rest of that, you know, you kind of see, yeah, okay, they want more mobile blue lines. They, you know, because a guy like Mark Barberio, not a great in zone defender. Most of those guys on that list, you know, Girard, when he first got to the league, was a better in zone defender than offensive defenseman.
Yeah.
But it was also, he was also playing really, really, really safe. You could argue that the Avs would probably like for him to maybe go back to that. But whatever. I want to get into that today. But you could see, like, the makings of what they would want. And you would see, you know, the ultimate misfit that kind of dropped out of nowhere that ended up fitting with them really nicely was Ryan Graves. And it was because he was a high IQ player who just made really good, aggressive decisions. And I think that pushed them even further into the, we want guys who can do these things. And when they had the failures with Patrick Nemeth, you know, with those limitations, with the big minutes things that they gave him, I think that was when they were like, okay, we cannot have these kinds of guys anymore. Like, this guy, like, we can have a Jack Johnson, Patrick Nemeth, an Andreas Englund. You know, we can have these really limited types of guys. But
I mean, I think...
We can Josh have Manson. One of them, and we can surround them with a certain ecosystem.
I think Josh Manson is the perfect example, because the Avs' defensive system is basically they're like, look, we're going to give you carte blanche to do whatever you want until you prove to us that you can't do that.
Yeah.
So it really is interesting to see a player like Josh Manson come in and activate that offensive side of his game. And it worked for Colorado, where it hadn't worked as well for places like
Anaheim. One, so. Manson remains an interesting kind of litmus test for other defensive defensemen, because you see with the guy like Jack Johnson, or this year, pick one, those guys don't even try it.
Yeah.
They either don't read the game like that, they don't have any interest in it, they know, like, this is only going to lead to mistakes. Andreas Englund activated once last night, once, and it turned into an odd man rush.
Yep.
That Sam Girard bailed him out of, by the way.
Ryan Graves made a bunch of really good, smart decisions all the way up until game five of overtime, and then that aggressive decision-making. I will never forget the second shot off the shin pads. I was like, you're kidding.
The first one, you're like, all right, cool, survived it. The second one was like, like a slow motion horror film.
It was because, like, the puck came right back to him. It was like, wow, the universe bailed you out of that one. That the block shot went right back to your. He did it again. Oh my god! Like, it was just unbelievable.
On that,
it sucks that that's like a defining play.
He,
like,
he was so good here.
Yeah, it really does suck.
We are brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. If you go over there and use code DNVR right now, you can bet on any NBA game with a new account. Bet $5 and you get $200 in free bets instantly. Don't even have to get the bet correct. DraftKings is just giving you $200 in free bets, which you can jump on and then go bet on whatever you want, whether it be same game parlays where you can boost your odds super easily, or regular old bets on absolutely crazy sports like Hialeah or something. You can really get into some interesting stuff with DraftKings if you have a little bit of fun with it. I haven't done anything too crazy lately, but it's a new year. There's chess championships going on right now. Magnus Carlsen is playing terribly, by the way. So maybe don't bet on Magnus this year, but Lots of options when it comes to DraftKings Sportsbook. Be sure to use that DNVR code when you sign up. You must be 21 or older, Colorado only. Other terms, restrictions, and conditions apply. You can see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details or the show notes down below. And, of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Also, brought to you by the amazing people over at Illegal Pete's. We have one just a couple of blocks down. Look, don't get us wrong. We all love the bar food. We're all about it. We love eating at our own bar, but when you go to the bar as often as we do, sometimes the food gets a little bit old after like months and months and months. So it's really nice to have Illegal Pete's just down the block where we can go order ourselves a delicious burrito and get ourselves some amazing good food. They have fresh food. They have diets set up for any dietary restrictions you might have, whether it's gluten-free or vegan, vegetarian, whatever. They've got fresh ingredients to make it work for you. They, of course, also have happy hour from 3 to 6 p.m. every single day. You can do a little pregame at Illegal Pete's before you come down to the bar. There are 11 different locations now, I believe, between Colorado and Arizona. So lots of options. You can find one near you. Check out Illegal Pete's for their delicious burritos. Second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. The Avs had two pretty clear, I think, fits with their current mode in defense in Ozilinch and Lyles in their history. Yeah. Are there as clear of choices on the forward side?
I feel like there's so many good ones.
I mean, if I run through the list of, I mean, guys that were here not that long ago between, obviously this is just from a hockey perspective,
you're going to say who I'm thinking.
But between Matt Duchene, Ryan O'Reilly, and Paul Stastny, do you have a bad choice there? If you're talking about looking for a 2C, is there a bad choice there?
What age version of Paul Stastny are you getting?
His Colorado tenure.
Okay.
I'm assuming all of these players, since we're going to be dealing with some people that are like long since retired, I'm assuming we're talking all players in their prime, right?
That's what I've been playing off of.
I've been mostly thinking what they were like when they were Avs. So like, I'm not thinking about Paul Kariya or Timo Solani or Jari Kurri.
Paul Kariya was one of mine where I was like,
we also said nobody in the Hall of Fame or nobody who has a retired jersey.
Okay.
So we didn't actually say that on as a distinction at the start of this pod. It was in our conversation last night to avoid the obvious. Yeah. Like, well, sure, would be nice to have Patrick Waugh in there right now. So I'm doing this about and saying let's go with the parameters of no retired numbers, no Hall of Fame players, and basing this off of what they were like in their Avalanche tenure. Yeah. Yep. Because like Dale Hunter and Jari Kurri were Avs, and you're like, well, they could have been. You know, Jari Kurri is one of the best right wings of all time. See, yeah, so like Theo Fleury.
That actually brings, like someone just put it in there, but like Marek Svatos or like,
yeah, I was gonna say
Wojtek Volski or guys that, again, if you're going based on what they were like when they were Avs,
yeah.
Career did not go well after the Avs.
Svatos before his knee blew up would be a perfect fit for this team.
Hat trick against Calgary is one of my like, it's one of those just like weird hockey memories that will always stick in my head.
I mean, from the 96 team alone, you could have a conversation about Adam Dedmarsh, Claude Lemieux, and Val Kaminsky.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like everyone's favorite, like lore daddy, Chris Drury.
Yeah, I thought of Chris Drury.
Like, you're talking about him. You need a 2C that's going to come up big in moments and can really, like, you want to put Colorado Chris Drury in between Gabe Landeskog and Val Nichushkin?
Yeah, let's say, we all talk about how, like, JT Compher is, like, a poor man's Chris Drury.
Yeah.
You could just have Chris Drury in this.
Exactly.
Honestly, the
someone you could have like Ginla. Three different versions of Alex Tangay.
Alex Tangay is another big one. Is where it's like Alex Tangay would be amazing on this team. Jerome Ginla, that first year, Jerome Ginla, I actually don't feel like is that.
I mean, that dude's going to the Hall of Fame. So
yeah,
not there yet though. He's not there yet. He works. He fits.
Yeah, I mean, that's an obvious, like, this is coming. The one guy that I really, really was, like, dying to sneak into this conversation. How do we feel about Semyon Varlamov?
So it's hard.
No offense to Georgiev, obviously.
What's hard is I actually really like this year's tandem. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have an issue with this year's duo.
It's a top three tandem right now.
Don't think I could do it right for two reasons. One, 13-14, when he played out of his mind, he kind of fell apart in that playoff series.
He was exhausted.
Do you want to fucking fight right now? I'm going to drive to your house.
And
he
two.
Literally, he had carried that team through every single win they had earned that season.
I'm not denying that.
Do you remember that postseason series when he got shelled for six games and then finally caved at the end? It's like blaming Darcy Kuemper when the Avs dropped the Brazils on him.
It's not my bigger argument is the rest of his tenure in Colorado is you have to schedule that guy missing 25 to 30 games a year.
The injuries were always overblown. He played 50 games a year reliably.
I just didn't trust him. And I agree with Jesse. I don't think I would mess with this year's tandem either.
This is why I thought it would be an interesting conversation, though, because I've always felt like Varley was a little underrated by Avalanche fans, just a touch. He had some real down years. Like, there were a couple of years where he was not very good.
I feel like maybe a touch underrated, but I think very underappreciated. Because the years that he was good, like, he was very good in years where the team was bad. And so I just don't think people fully...
I think people forget how bad the Avs defense was at that time. Their defense was terrible. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. Megan mentioned in the chat, I think Peter Mueller would be an awesome fit. You could set him up on a power play unit and just let him unleash one timers.
So hold on. You're going to say that you're wish-washy on Varley because you had to schedule him for missing 25 games a year.
I totally get that I'm cheating and Peter Mueller's injury career totally derails that theory, but.
Ooh, Tomas Fleischmann. That's a great answer.
A fun one.
I don't even know if it's a great answer for this team. That's a fun name.
Play in altitude because of his blood clotting issues.
Yeah, for sure. For current players, I would say Matt Nieto.
Why?
What does he do?
He's just a perfect fit organizationally for the way the Avs depth plays. Like, you have another little crazy buzzing bee down in your bottom six. It's all just Logan O'Connor 2.0.
If you needed a 13th forward in the postseason, I'm cool with that, man.
I think it could be an 11th or 12th.
I wouldn't play him over Ben Myers in a healthy lineup.
I would play him over Ben Myers.
Well, he's not a center, so
that's true.
That's mainly it. I would play both Cogliano and O'Connor over Nieto, and then I would pick a center to be my center. That's all that is.
Not a bad philosophy. With the guy who actually plays this position there.
Yeah, so all the wings that are getting brought up, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, if I were to drop them into Colorado's current lineup, like, where am I putting Ryan Smith in the current one? Because
The Colorado version of Ryan Smith drove me crazy.
You mean I'm going to skate down the left wing, get a foot inside the blue line, and fire a slap shot?
Yeah. Could not.
Right into the goalie's chest or have it rim around the boards?
Insane. Yeah. It would be insane.
It was not isolated to just you because I specifically remember that shit.
Hard out on Ryan Smith coming back.
what about Radim Vrbata?
Yeah, if we were judging this on his Colorado tenure, he didn't really get a chance to get off the ground, and obviously he played 1,000 games after that, so he had a pretty good career.
That dude had one of the weirdest careers ever. Like, he was good. Like, he was a pretty reliable producer. But he bounced around quite a bit. He was never really like a top guy anywhere. But like you said, 1,000 games, almost 300 goals.
One of those weird guys that like flourished in Arizona.
Yeah. His career high for a season was 35 goals in Arizona in 11-12.
The year they went to the Western Conference Final.
Colorado, Carolina, Chicago, Arizona, Tampa, Arizona, Vancouver, Arizona, Florida.
He kept trying to go back, and they're like, dude, we don't want you anymore.
Yet he just kept, like, the year before he went, his last stint in Arizona was 16-17. Season before that, he was in Vancouver, 13 goals. He went back to Arizona and had a 20-goal year the next year.
I know, man.
What the fuck?
Yeah, see, Hadik would be great on any team. He's not allowed.
Yeah, he's a retired number.
Yeah, a 50 goal scorer would obviously be like, oh.
Ryan O'Reilly, I do think, is the other, like, and you brought him up first. Yeah. Like, of those three, I do think he's the best fit.
Well, and guess what he's doing at the deadline this year? Packing his shit!
Yeah.
Alex
Tanguay, I do think, is a big one that we breezed over maybe a little too quickly.
So Tanguay, if the Avs roster this year is healthy... Where is he playing?
I don't know what that means.
Are you taking Arturi Lehkonen away from Nathan MacKinnon and putting Lehkonen on your third line?
On the third line. If you put Tanguay next to Alex Newhook, like, are you not just yucking all the way to the bank? Like,
yeah, you get two guys that are going to overpass until they lose the shot attempt.
Alex Newhook's not overpassing anymore.
Do you go Tanguay with Nate and Val, and then you go Landy, Mikko, Lehkonen.
So
you don't have a true center on that second line.
Are you getting the version of Mikko who's shooting the puck? Because if you're getting the shooty Mikko, you can put Tanguay with him.
You're getting this,
yeah, which is pretty shooty this year for the most part.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
You can play Tanguay with that.
I just think having someone like Tanguay to distribute to a player like Nate would.
He's a really good playmaker. I just wonder, like, do they, like, is that, because, like, I'm thinking about like Claude Lemieux, and I'm like, do they need another like power guy?
Yeah, I don't think so.
But also, again, if you put Claude Lemieux next to Nathan MacKinnon and Gabe Landeskog, and then Arturi Lehkonen drops down into your lineup, say on your third line next to Alex Newhook, you have a better lineup. Like,
all right, two things. One, you may have noticed there isn't a single person who has said Cody McLeod,
dude.
Well. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I get that Cody McLeod is very
well. Where did that
name even come from? Because Cody McLeod is very well loved in Avalanche circles, right? Like, there's a lot of fans who really like that guy.
Can I just say, I think he's kind of forgotten about at this point because the team is good again.
I guess after they won the cup, they don't really
talk about him. He was the hero of the shitty generation, and now everyone's like, oh, yeah, that dude that always got his ass kicked in fights. I remember him, yeah.
Again, awesome dude, did what the Avs needed him to do in a bad time. I think he might be one of the most overrated Avs players ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other guy I wanted to bring up, Brandon Saad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I just don't know if I'm bumping anybody for that version of Brandon Saad on a fully healthy roster.
Dude who scored over half a point per game.
Yeah, it was good.
It was fine.
But I'm like, do I want Brandon Sod or do I want 1997 Adam Deadmarsh?
I mean, no, I get it. There are probably better options in history, but I'm just throwing out.
That's Stefan Yao is the one I've been waiting to see. I've been waiting for somebody because that guy, people love that guy. And is like, has been like the, could we get the next Stefan Yao for like forever? You drop that guy. I would play that guy over Ben Myers between Cogliano and LOC. Yes, please. Stefan Yao in between those cats. Oh.
Second really weird stint here.
Yeah, that lasted like 10 seconds. Like they traded for him at the deadline and then he was like, yeah, I'm good.
I just remember thinking that it was so weird to see him in the Unipron jersey. Okay. What?
Yeah, like people were talking about Theo Fleury, and like you have to imagine Theo Fleury playing this kind of up-tempo hockey.
Yeah, he'd be a beast, you would think. Yeah. But we are brought to you by Game Time. If you want to go watch the current Avalanche play hockey games, you can use Game Time right now. There's a link down in the description of this video. You can go click on, get in on it, and go to games. It doesn't even have to be Avs games. It could be any team, any sport, anywhere in the country. They got you covered. You can get in and get your tickets for up to 60% off original prices, and you get great seats all the way around. They'll show you where you're going to sit. They'll get you all set up. Join 15 million people who have used the Game Time app, and help us out by using that link down in the description. Also brought to you by Bacchus and Shanker. If you have been injured, like many Avalanche players this year, I think they've been wearing that 2 number out on their phones, all right, at this point. They've been dialing Bacchus and Shanker a lot at 222-2222. Whether it's a car accident, motorcycle, if you're in a ride share, or even if you got injured at work, Bacchus and Shanker can help you out. You can call them for a consultation today that costs you absolutely nothing to see if you have a case. And if even if they take on your case, you still pay nothing until you win the case. So there's literally no downside for you to call Bacchus and Shanker today. They've won over $1 billion for their clients over the last 25 years. They've been doing it here in Colorado forever. So as we say, just press 2 for a while, get connected with Bacchus and Shanker. Amazing at what they do, and get yourself what you deserve from your injury. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Going through this Sunday, we got a sale going on. You can get this shirt I'm wearing right here, the Colorado Champs shirt, for 50% off. A bunch of other shirts as well. The Landy Cup shirts, 50% off. We have a bunch that are 25% off as well. Be sure you go check out the DNVR locker to get your savings on a bunch of these shirts. You got to get them while you can here. We got to clear out all of these shirts so we can bring you guys new shirts. We started talking about it a little bit. We got some ideas for some new shirts. So keep your eyes peeled. That's all I'm saying. Colorado Avalanche I always find it an interesting organization because on the one hand, especially when you include the time in Quebec, they do have a pretty long history, but it feels like nothing compared to some of the teams in the NHL when you're talking about original six teams and things like that.
I think what's crazy about the history of the organization is that it is so dominated by forwards.
Yep.
Like, name the 5 best defensemen in franchise history.
Cale Makar, Cale Makar, Cale Makar, Cale Makar, and Cale Makar. That was a Dylon reference, if anybody picked up on that. Dylon? Nobody? Bueller?
It gets hard after you get to, like, certainly the 5th one. You have Makar, Adam Foote.
I would have given anything had you relisted Cale Makar's name 5 times again.
Yeah, Makar again. Yeah, Adam Foote, obviously, probably Rob Blake is on that list. He was here long enough, depending on how you feel about Ray Bourque.
Well, I guess it depends on what your criteria is, because, like, I don't think there's any doubt that, like, Ray Bourque's
sure
among the best. But it's kind of like the Joel Quenneville conversation.
Right,
like,
yeah. Just
get credit.
And then the 5th one might be, like, Eric Johnson.
That's kind of my problem is that, like, even if, and obviously I am not well versed in Quebec Nordiques history.
Right. I wouldn't know, especially the early years there.
Yeah. I don't know enough about it. And, you know, I don't know anything about some of those guys that played back then.
Well, and then I guess it's also kind of hard because, like, how do you weigh different value? Like, how does Tyson Barrie and John Michael Lyles fit into just that conversation in general? I'm not saying that necessarily either of those guys are not five, but, like, their names are all over the record books, very, you know, very near the top.
It's kind of the same kind of, like, how do you weigh those guys against, like, a Carlos Krastich, right, who was a great defensive defenseman in his time in Colorado, and an Iron Man. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how do you, you know, what about a guy like, you know, Alexei Kucherov, who played for the franchise for 10 years? You know, and again, a very good defensive defenseman. You know, so there's different values there, but that's where when you look back at the history of the organization, it is interesting to look and say it's so forward heavy that right. You know,
there aren't many all-time D. Yeah,
well, and like, where does Eric Johnson fit into that conversation?
Well, it's just such a huge gap, right? Again, Makar certainly looks like he's on a Hall of Fame path. Rob Blake is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Rob, like 4 years of Rob Blake.
Right. Right. Ray Bourque, if you're counting him, is a Hall of Famer, if you're taking that stance on Ray Bourque. And then even the gap from those three to Adam Foote is like huge.
Yeah.
And then you have Adam Foote kind of on his own as the staple defenseman of the Avalanche in his history. And then it's another huge gap to the next guy.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, it's just, it is just interesting just the way that you choose to weigh this. Cause again, like now looking at it, like Tyson Barrie and John Michael Lyles are 1 and 2 in terms of all time points by a defenseman. And then there's a good amount of space and it's Eric Johnson. And Cale Makar is right fucking behind him. And then it's, I mean, a good, what? Almost 30 points before you get to Adam Foote, who's almost double the amount of games of Tyson Barrie. And so it's just like, how do you...
Yeah, you're comparing defensive ability with offensive ability.
Yeah, I mean, you're just valuing the, you know, who's a better overall player and where, how do you... What do you do with all that? It's hard.
How much credit does Tyson be knowing how much his defensive shortcomings were a thing during his time in Denver? Like, that's just the part that's interesting about this. And I think the point you're making, AJ, is it's a little bit more clear cut on the forward side.
Well, on the forward side, it's like a who's who of Hall of Famers or really, really, really good. But like, you have the entire Stastny family lineage in the organization. Guys who scored a jajillion points,
right?
You know, I mean, you have Michel Goulet just hanging around with his almost 1,000 career points in your organization. So right. You know, like there's you look at the top 10 of the organization in points, okay? But you know what? Let's go top 15, okay? I'm just gonna read off 15 names. And you're going to laugh to realize how much talent has come through this organization and its existence. All right.
Is this Colorado and Quebec?
Yes.
Okay. Cause I've got this Colorado pulled up and it's already ridiculous.
It's Joe Sakic, Peter Stastny, Michel Goulet, Milan Hayduk, Peter Forsberg, Nathan MacKinnon, Anton Stastny, Gabe Landeskog, Alex Tanguay, Mikko Rantanen, Dale Hunter, Paul Stastny, Matt Duchene, Valerie Kamensky, and Matt Sundin.
Pretty good.
Okay.
All forwards, yep. By the way.
That's five guys that are in the Hall of Fame.
A couple guys on their way to the Hall
in of Fame. In Sakic, Peter Stastny, Michel Goulet, Peter Forsberg, and Matt Sundin. at least one guy in Nathan MacKinnon that I'm pretty confident gets there.
Probably two, man.
Yeah. A second guy in Mikko Rantanen that sure looks like he could be headed there too.
Do you think Gabe Landeskog has an outside chance at a Hall of Fame?
Outside, yes. But we've talked about this on days where you were doing your day job and not on the pod with us. But they would have to win two more cups.
I was going to say, he needs more cups.
He's the captain and he's like continued to be a high level player on those teams, not like a Brendan Morrow third line guy or whatever.
Automatic 20 goal guy. Like,
yeah. If he continues to be in the 20 to 30 goal range, scores 60 ish points, he's in your top six. He has a great postseason and he's the captain of a team that wins three Stanley Cups in however many years. You combine all of that success with the fact that he will have been a 20-year captain by the end of his career.
Right.
He will have probably scored 300 or 400 goals. You know, he'll
held get the title to, at one point for youngest captain ever.
Well, and
the NHL's own list, that should be good enough to put him in the top 100 players of all time, right?
That, plus there will also be that one time that he captained the Swedish team in the World Championships.
Yeah, won the gold there.
An amazing accomplishment, but he was also...
Yeah.
It's the Hockey Hall of Fame where they consider other accomplishments, things like the fact that he was the first European captain in CHL history.
Yeah.
So that is where I think...
The more we're listening, the more I'm talking myself into
it. Well, it's like if those things happen... And he ends up having one of the more storied and accomplished careers in NHL history, then yeah, he goes in.
Olympic silver medal as well.
It would require more Stanley Cups to make it happen. And he has to continue to play.
It definitely requires one more cup. If he gets two cups, it becomes a real interesting borderline case. If he gets three, he's in.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying get three, because then I think it's done.
AJ, the international stuff's a good call out too, because he's got two world championship gold, he's got an Olympic silver,
which hopefully he gets another chance at the Olympics.
And that's where you wonder how much these guys in this era are getting cheated
because
out of the opportunities to do this stuff.
Yeah,
because I mean, some of the, like MacKinnon hasn't even had a chance to be triple gold.
Nope.
Yep.
Hasn't even gotten that opportunity.
It's tough.
Yeah.
All right. I'm pretty good with that, unless you guys had any other players or situations you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, pick one. You. From Avs history.
Have to pick one.
No Nordiques. You only pick one to put on today's team with today's lineup in mind. You can only pick one player from Avs history. It could be forward, defenseman, or goaltender. Pick one.
I'm going to take Alex Tanguay just because.
Oof, man, that is tough.
I mean, given our criteria, he adds the most to your forward group.
Sure.
He's not a Hall of Famer. He doesn't have his number retired. Blah, blah, blah.
I think I have to take... Ryan O'Reilly.
I'm taking Chris Drury.
Honestly, I think those are all really fucking good answers, and you're stoked if any of that happens.
For sure. Well, we'll see. The Ryan O'Reilly one could happen. Probably won't, but theoretically could happen.
Yeah, there was no way I wasn't picking a center. It was going to be Chris Drury or Ryan O'Reilly. With Paul Stastny kind of getting left out in the cold here.
Yeah.
He was a really, really good two-way player for a lot of his whole Colorado tenure. But I love Chris Drury, and he's right-handed. And it would be fun to have Drury and Ginger Drury on the same team.
Yeah.
Either way, a fun little off-season or off-day, not off-season show. We are doing an off-day show on Friday down at the farmhouse with Breck Brew. It's down in Littleton. If you're local, come on down. You can watch us do the pod live. We have all the DNVR crew hanging out. when you come down to the farmhouse, you let them know DNVR brought you. They'll give you 10% off your tab. So come have some fun with us on Friday down at the farmhouse. Should be a blast. Should be a fun time. Other than that, yeah, you guys already said it. Like, subscribe, help us out here. If you listen to us on the podcast version, I know some days you can't watch live on YouTube. You want to do it while you're driving into work or something. We do have a podcast on all your local podcast hosts. If you want to give us 5 stars reviews on the podcast of your choosing, that would help us out a lot. We appreciate all y'all, and we hope you have a great rest of your day. We will talk to you for the game tomorrow.